Comedius, A Brief History of Tomorrow. Record, upload, share. But maybe you don't need convincing, especially if you are under 20. People just want to be part of the data flow, even if that means giving up their privacy, their autonomy, and their individuality. Humanist art sanctifies the individual genius, and a Picasso doodle on a napkin nets millions at Sotheby's. Humanist science glorifies the individual researcher, and every scholar dreams of putting his or her name at the top of a science or nature paper. But a growing number of artistic and scientific creations are nowadays produced by the ceaseless collaboration of everyone. Who writes Wikipedia? All of us. The individual is becoming a tiny chip inside a giant system that nobody really understands. Every day I absorb countless data bits through emails, phone calls, and articles, process the data, and transmit back new bits through more emails, phone calls, and articles. I don't really know where I fit into the great scheme of things and how my bits of data connect with the bits produced by billions of other humans and computers. I don't have time to find out because I am too busy answering all the emails. And as I process more data more efficiently, answering more emails, making more phone calls, and writing more articles, so the people around me are flooded by even more data. This relentless flow of data sparks new inventions and disruptions that nobody plans, controls, or comprehends. No one understands how the global economy functions or where global politics is heading. But no one needs to understand. All you need to do is answer your emails faster and allow the system to read them. Just as free market capitalists believe in the invisible hand of the market, so dataists believe in the invisible hand of the data flow. As the global data processing system becomes all-knowing and all-powerful, so connecting to the system becomes the source of all meaning. Humans want to merge into the data flow because when you are part of the data flow, you are part of something much bigger than yourself. Traditional religions told you that your every word and action was part of some great cosmic plan, and that God watched you every minute and cared about all your thoughts and feelings. Data religion now says that your every word and action is part of the great data flow, that the algorithms are constantly watching you, and that they care about everything you do and feel. Most people like this very much. For true believers, to be disconnected from the data flow risks losing the very meaning of life. What's the point of doing or experiencing anything if nobody knows about it, and if it doesn't contribute something to the global exchange of information? Humanism thought that experiences occur inside us and that we ought to find within ourselves the meaning of all that happens, thereby infusing the universe with meaning. Dataists believe that experiences are valueless if they are not shared and that we need not, indeed cannot, find meaning within ourselves. We need only record and connect our experience to the great data flow, and the algorithms will discover its meaning and tell us what to do. 20 years ago, Japanese tourists were a universal laughing stock because they always carried cameras and took pictures of everything in sight. Now, everyone is doing it. If you go to India and see an elephant, you don't look at the elephant and ask yourself, "What do I feel?" You're too busy looking for your smartphone, taking a picture of the elephant, posting it on Facebook, and then checking your account every 2 minutes to see how many likes you got. Writing a private diary, a common humanist practice in previous generations, sounds to many present-day youngsters utterly pointless. Why write anything if nobody else can read it? The new motto says, if you experience something, record it. If you record something, upload it. If you upload something, share it. Throughout this book, we have repeatedly asked what makes humans superior to other animals. Dataism has a new and simple answer. In themselves, human experiences are not superior at all to the experiences of wolves and elephants. One bit of data is as good as another. However, a human can write a poem about his experience and post it online, thereby enriching the global data processing system. That makes his bits count. A wolf cannot do this. Hence, all of the wolf's experiences, as deep and complex as they may be, are worthless. No wonder we are so busy converting our experiences into data. It isn't a question of trendiness. It is a question of survival. We must prove to ourselves and to the system that we still have value. And value lies not in having experiences, but in turning these experiences into free-flowing data. By the way, wolves, or at least their dark cousins, are not a hopeless case. A company called No More Woof is developing a helmet for reading canine experiences. The helmet monitors a dog's brainwaves and uses computer algorithms to translate simple messages such as, "I am angry," into human language. Your dog may soon have a Facebook or Twitter account of his own, perhaps with more likes and followers than you. Dataism is neither liberal nor humanist. It should be emphasized, however, that dataism is an anti-humanist. It has nothing against human experiences, it just does not think they are intrinsically valuable. When we surveyed the three main humanist sects, we asked which experience is the most valuable, listening to Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, to Chuck Berry, to a pygmy initiation song, or to the howl of a wolf in heat. A dataist would argue that the entire exercise is misguided, because music should be evaluated according to the data it carries, rather than according to the experience it creates. A dataist may argue, for example, that the Fifth Symphony carries far more data than the pygmy initiation song, because it uses more chords and scales and creates dialogues with many more musical styles. Consequently, you need far more computational power to decipher the Fifth Symphony, and you gain far more knowledge from doing so. Music, according to this view, is mathematical patterns. Mathematics can describe every musical piece as well as the relations between any two pieces. Hence, you can measure the precise data value of every symphony, song, and howl, and determine which is richest. The experiences they create in humans or wolves don't really matter. True, for the last 70,000 years or so, human experiences have been the most efficient data processing algorithms in the universe. Hence, there was good reason to sanctify them. However, we may soon reach a point when these algorithms will be superseded and even become a burden. Sapiens evolved in the African savanna tens of thousands of years ago, and their algorithms are just not built to handle 21st century data flows. We might try to upgrade the human data processing system, but this may not be enough. The Internet of All Things may soon create such huge and rapid data flows that even upgraded human algorithms cannot handle it. When the car replaced the horse-drawn carriage, we did not upgrade the horses, we retired them. Perhaps it is time to do the same with Homo sapiens. Dataism adopts a strictly functional approach to humanity, appraising the value of human experiences according to their function in data processing mechanisms. If we develop an algorithm that fulfills the same function better, human experiences will lose their value. Thus, if we can replace not just taxi drivers and doctors, but also lawyers, poets, and musicians with superior computer programs, why should we care if these programs have no consciousness and no subjective experiences? If some humanist starts adulating the sacredness of human experience, dataists would dismiss such sentimental humbug. The experience you praise is just an outdated biochemical algorithm. In the African savanna 70,000 years ago, that algorithm was state of the art. Even in the 20th century, it was vital for the army and for the economy. But soon, we will have much better algorithms. In the climactic scene of many Hollywood science fiction movies, humans face an alien invasion fleet, an army of rebellious robots, or an all-knowing supercomputer that wants to obliterate them. Humanity seems doomed. But at the very last moment, against all the odds, humanity triumphs thanks to something that aliens, the robots, and the supercomputers did not suspect and cannot fathom. Love. The hero, who up till now has been easily manipulated by the supercomputer and has been riddled with bullets by the evil robots, is inspired by his sweetheart to make a completely unexpected move that turns the tables on the thunderstruck matrix. Dataism finds such scenarios utterly ridiculous. Come on, it admonishes the Hollywood screenwriters. Is that all you could come up with? Love? And not even some platonic cosmic love, but the carnal attraction between two mammals? Do you really think that an all-knowing supercomputer or aliens who managed to conquer the entire galaxy would be dumbfounded by a hormonal rush? By equating the human experience with data patterns, dataism undermines our main source of authority and meaning, and heralds a tremendous religious revolution, the like of which has not been seen since the 18th century. In the days of Locke, Hume, and Voltaire, humanists argued that God is a product of the human imagination. Dataism now gives humanists a taste of their own medicine and tells them, yes, God is a product of the human imagination, but human imagination in turn is the product of biochemical algorithms. In the 18th century, humanism sidelined God by shifting from a deocentric to a homocentric worldview. In the 21st century, dataism may sideline humans by shifting from a homocentric to a data-centric view. The dataist revolution will probably take a few decades, if not a century or two. But then, the humanist revolution too did not happen overnight. At first, humans kept on believing in God, and argued that humans are sacred because they were created by God for some divine purpose. Only much later did some people dare say that humans are sacred in their own right, and that God does not exist at all. Similarly today, most dataists say that the Internet of All Things is sacred, because humans are creating it to serve human needs. But eventually, the Internet of All Things may become sacred in its own right. The shift from a homocentric to a data-centric worldview won't be merely a philosophical revolution, it will be a practical revolution. All truly important revolutions are practical. The humanist idea that humans invented God was significant because it had far-reaching practical implications. Similarly, the dataist idea that organisms are algorithms is significant due to its day-to-day practical consequences. Ideas change the world only when they change our behavior. In ancient Babylon, when people faced a difficult dilemma, they climbed to the top of the local temple in the darkness of night and observed the sky. The Babylonians believed that the stars control our fate and predict our future. By watching the stars, the Babylonians decided whether to get married, plough the field, or go to war. Their philosophical beliefs were translated into very practical procedures. Scriptural religions such as Judaism and Christianity told a different story. The stars are lying. God, who created the stars, revealed the entire truth in the Bible. So stop observing the stars, read the Bible instead. These too was a practical recommendation. When people did not know whom to marry, what career to choose, and whether to start a war, they read the Bible and followed its counsel. Next came the humanists, with an altogether new story. Humans invented God, wrote the Bible, and then interpreted it in 1,000 different ways. So humans themselves are the source of all truth. You may read the Bible as an inspiring human creation, but you don't have to. If you are facing any dilemma, just listen to yourself and follow your inner voice. Humanism then gave detailed practical instructions on how to listen to yourself, recommending things such as watching sunsets, reading Goethe, keeping a private diary, having heart-to-heart talks with a good friend, and holding democratic elections. For centuries, scientists too accepted these humanist guidelines. When physicists wondered whether to get married or not, they too watched sunsets and tried to get in touch with themselves. When chemists contemplated whether to accept a problematic job offer, they too wrote diaries and had heart-to-heart talks with a good friend. When biologists debated whether to wage war or sign a peace treaty, they too voted in democratic elections. When brain scientists wrote books about their startling discoveries, they often put an inspiring Goethe quote on the first page. This was the basis for the modern alliance between science and humanism, which kept the delicate balance between the modern yang and the modern yin, between reason and emotion, between the laboratory and the museum, between the production line and the supermarket. The scientists not only sanctified human feelings, but also found an excellent evolutionary reason to do so. After Darwin, biologists began explaining that feelings are complex algorithms honed by evolution to help animals make the right decisions. Our love, our fear, and our passion are not some nebulous spiritual phenomena good only for composing poetry. Rather, they encapsulate millions of years of practical wisdom. When you read the Bible, we get advice from a few priests and rabbis who lived in ancient Jerusalem. In contrast, when you listen to your feelings, you follow an algorithm that evolution has developed for millions of years and that withstood the harshest quality tests of natural selection. Your feelings are the voice of millions of ancestors, each of whom managed to survive and reproduce in an unforgiving environment. Your feelings are not infallible, of course, but they are better than most alternatives. For millions upon millions of years, feelings were the best algorithms in the world. Hence, in the days of Confucius, of Muhammad, or of Stalin, people should have listened to their feelings rather than to the teachings of Confucianism, Islam, or communism. Yet in the 21st century, feelings are no longer the best algorithms in the world. We are developing superior algorithms which utilize unprecedented computing power and giant databases. The Google and Facebook algorithms not only know exactly how you feel, they also know a million other things about you that you hardly suspect. Consequently, you should now stop listening to your feelings and start listening to these external algorithms instead. What's the use of having democratic elections when the algorithms know how each person is going to vote? And when they also know the exact neurological reasons why one person votes Democrat while another votes Republican. Whereas humanism commanded listen to your feelings, Dataism now commands, listen to the algorithms, they know how you feel. When you contemplate whom to marry, which career to pursue, and whether to start a war, dataism tells you it would be a total waste of time to climb a high mountain and watch the sun setting on the waves. It would be equally pointless to go to a museum, write a private diary, or have a heart-to-heart talk with a friend. Yes, in order to make the right decisions, you must get to know yourself better. But if you want to know yourself in the 21st century, there are much better methods than climbing mountains, going to museums, or writing diaries. Here are some practical dataist guidelines for you. You want to know who you really are? Ask dataism. Then forget about mountains and museums. Have you had your DNA sequenced? No? What are you waiting for? Go and do it today, and convince your grandparents, parents, and siblings to have their DNA sequenced too. The data is very valuable for you. And have you heard about these wearable biometric devices that measure your blood pressure and heart rate 24 hours a day? Good. So buy one of those, put it on, and connect it to your smartphone. And while you're shopping, buy a mobile camera and a microphone, record everything you do, and put it online. And allow Google and Facebook to read all your emails, monitor all your chats and messages, and keep a record of all your likes and clicks. If you do all that, then the great algorithms of the Internet of All Things will tell you whom to marry, which career to pursue, and whether to start a war. But where do these great algorithms come from? This is the mystery of dataism. Just as according to Christianity, we humans cannot understand God and His plan, so dataism says the human brain cannot embrace the new master algorithms. At present, of course, the algorithms are mostly written by human hackers. Yet the really important algorithms, such as the Google search algorithm, are developed by huge teams. Each member understands just one part of the puzzle, and nobody really understands the algorithm as a whole. Moreover, with the rise of machine learning and artificial neural networks, more and more algorithms evolve independently, improving themselves and learning from their own mistakes. They analyze astronomical amounts of data, which no human can possibly encompass, and learn to recognize patterns and adopt strategies that escape the human mind. The seed algorithm may initially be developed by humans, but as it grows, it follows its own path, going where no human has gone before, and where no human can follow.